It's impressive, and my hat's off to you, because most people are not thinking about that before, you know, a lot of times they end up hiring an HR director and then, you know, putting it off to them to do. So
yeah,
that's,
it's hard to sort of pivot great. And say, well, now that we're here, this is what we want to be like. So, hey, everyone follow suit, and people say, it's not who we are. Like in your dreams, like that's the way you want it to be, but it's not that way.
Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, where we are putting you in touch with the people who bring student housing to life. This episode, once again, is sponsored by Conservice, the student housing utility experts. If you're one of those people that have decided to take on all the utility management yourself, I completely get that. But I'm here to tell you that there are folks that are much better at it, much more efficient at it, and can take a lot of that headache off of your shoulders. So get in touch with Conservice at conservice.com. Greta.
Wesley.
Here we are again, one day later. Hey, I am, I went back to listen to the second part of the podcast or of the interview with Dale. And it's really hard to figure out which one I like more. And I don't know why I feel like I've got to, I should really like it for its entirety. I love the Cardinal story and how those guys, you know, came from nothing and built this, you know, built this. Their parents probably wouldn't appreciate me saying they came from nothing, but you know, they were just a group of guys who had kind of a common vision and background and said, hey, let's make something. And that's a great story to listen to, but getting into how, you know, intentional they were about the culture that they wanted their business to have, you know, how they set that out years beforehand, was just amazing. I think it proves out a lot about why they're such of a great place to work for now.
I completely agree. It's funny because you say it's difficult to choose, and it is, because the reality is that this is a company of people that are saturated with diligence and humility for what they're doing and what they're building. And I love that. And I love, Dell made a really great point that I think that is worth hearing for a lot of people, that, you know, they did start that idea and the concept of what that culture was going to be, and they're sticking by it, you know, with a term of a death grip almost of no matter what, which I love because it's a phenomenal culture. And, you know, I think that a lot of companies really do. In fact, I know for a fact that a lot of companies do later on, almost as an afterthought, say, okay, what is our culture, or how are we going to create that? Well, whether you like it or not, there's a culture that exists. So yeah, that needs to be acknowledged first and foremost. And then you're going to have to figure out how to build or rebuild from there. And luckily, you know, they didn't have to deal with that. There's no rebuilding. There's just a continuation of what they started from the beginning. And I love it.
Yeah. Culture will always exist. You know, you have the choice to author and create that and have the culture to support your business and your successes, you know, or you can, you know, take the passive route and let that, you know, naturally form, because it's going to, and it's going to mm-hmm. be based off of who you hire. And, you know, if you don't,
and what you allow to happen.
Yeah. And what you, exactly. And, you know, and if that's your choice of letting it happen naturally, then, you know, you take the chance that it's going to take away from those successes, or it's going to delay those successes, or not happen at all. So, you know, you should never allow that to happen. You should always want to, you should always be the person that's going to, you know, if you're a site leader, if you're that, you know, sitting in a C-suite of your organization, you really need to have, if it's not on you to create that culture, you should certainly sit down with the group of people that are responsible for that and come together on it. So And it's a lot easier to do it up front than it is on the back end and try to pivot and do it, as Dale mentions in the podcast, because at that point you've got employees that are looking at you like, you know, who the hell are you?
Yeah. Where did this come from? Bullshit on what it is that you're talking
about. Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, as much as we, you know, he stressed and, you know, we're reiterating how important it is to have it from the beginning. It's, you know, if it isn't in place, it does need to be in place. And I think it's a topic of conversation. But he made a couple of points that I feel like you see him splashed on LinkedIn every single day about culture and about treating your employees well so that they don't leave and taking care of your employees and all of these things. It almost just seems idiotic that we're still talking about it at this point because so many companies have yet to really just entrench and involve themselves in this. And, you know, but we are. And if you are a part of one of those companies, if you are one of those companies that really hasn't gotten a grip on this, it's just do it, bite the bullet. And then, yeah, you have to make sure that it isn't just something that's happening at your corporate office, that what you're saying isn't, they're not just words that come out of your mouth. It isn't each site, you know, is their own CEO or each store manager is their own CEO. You know, I worked a place a long time ago that did that. And, you know, if that's not true, then find something else. And all of these things really, really need to saturate the entirety of the company. And then you have to follow up with it constantly and make sure that it's really, truly there to be part of your organization, because you can't just print some cool words out and make a presentation and talk about it once a year at a manager's retreat and then just expect that that's awesome and it therefore makes your company awesome, because that's not how it works. This takes real work to accomplish and keep that beat going. So,
I'll
hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, I'll press play here in a minute, but I really encourage the listeners to kind of, you know, take your time with listening to this. And there's more stories that Dale talks about, and I mentioned in the last podcast that this was going to be more tactical, and it is from a standpoint that if you take something away from these stories and implement it, you know, as a principle or some type of basis, you'll understand what I'm talking about. If you just listen to it for, you know, face value of the story, you're probably not going to walk away from much. But, you know, for example, in that pre-clip that I had at the beginning of the episode, you know, he talks about why it's so important to do it at the beginning. And he tells a story about meeting with Tony Shea from Zappos and you know, some of the things that, you know, he walked away with from that meeting that, you know, are really good principles. And then he talks about, you know, at one of their retreats, you know, making the comment to the group that, you know, as we evolve, we'll change. And if our culture needs to change, or the culture changing, if it needs to change. And, you know, Alex stands up and says, no, you know, there will be a lot of things that will change, but culture will never change. And there's two lessons to take away from that. One is you got to hold each other accountable. And you know, Dale didn't mean anything by that, but it's one of those common things that, you know, had Alex let that go, because, you know, Dale was taking the stage on that, it would have said something to the rest of the group. And you know, by Alex doing that, it's showing, oh, these guys hold each other accountable. And that's how damn important culture has got to be. That's how damn important these principles are. Yeah. And so I think, you know, from that standpoint, if you look at these stories and really understand what happens in these stories, I think you'll take a lot more away from this than just the face value of the story. So,
absolutely. And I think that it should be noted in here somewhere. And I think you did mention it in the last one, but I'm going to reiterate it, that, you know, we know that this is a 3-part series that has focused on Cardinal. And that's not, you know, obviously this isn't the Cardinal podcast. This is something that Cardinal does incredibly well. And every company, I think, you know, they have their top things that they know are the things that they do best at. And you know, this is the thing that Cardinal does exceptionally well, and it doesn't take away from a lot of the other things that they do. But I think that, you know, the whole goal of the podcast was to share really some level of intimate knowledge of each company or aspect that we don't get from these conferences, where you can just be sitting and kind of ruminating on this information while you're driving to work in your commute, or while you're on the treadmill, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you may get a little bit additional information than you would in a conference, in a room full of people on a panel of, you know, different experts, that this gives you additional information and more food for thought than you would in a different environment. And I think that, you know, that's really what the focus is here. And that's not to say it's the only company that, you know, we talk to by any stretch of the imagination, but this is a really great story with a really great culture that is worthy of taking a look at and hearing something about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hit play and let our listeners hear the rest of the story.
Absolutely.
So that catches us up to today, and obviously with a lot of the, I mean, you said you guys began this with the intention of you know, playing in the big leagues, and along with that, you guys have created this culture that everybody kind of swarms to, that and has a great experience with, and I've got a feeling that was also done with intention as well. That didn't just happen because of the success that you know, that you guys had positioned yourself from a business standpoint. So I want to dive into that. But one quick question: as you guys went from, you know, from five core key members that were all partners to making that first hire, you know, that first true employee. Who was that? What was that for? And, you know, did that kind of provide the first, you know, oh shit moment of we've got other people than ourselves to take care of?
Yeah, I think we took the easy path a little bit. We hired Alex O'Brien's younger brother, John,
who was probably living with him at the time anyway, right?
He did. He's actually, Alex and I were roommates for a while, and John slept on the couch and ate all of our food, and we paid him in different ways, room and board, for a while. But he was, you know, had a lot of the intangibles, and I think what we've continued to look for at Cardinal Group in terms of the makeup of our team members, it's not necessarily, you know, deep experience in multifamily operations or anything. We're looking for character. We're looking for a lot of the intangibles that I think we see in ourselves as part of the secret sauce of what's going on. So he checked a lot of those boxes. He is now our controller. He's a fantastic financial mind, an advanced accountant, a bunch of different acronym taglines to his signature that I'm not even sure what they are, but he has been so instrumental to our success, a total stalwart and complimentary to the skill set that we had and where we needed help. And so John really helped develop the backbone, the accounting backbone of the system. So as for a long time, Cardinal sort of had this reputation of, oh, you're that great marketing company that does all these, you know, unique and creative marketing type of things. And we said, well, we're also a property management company, and we really take our accounting seriously. And I think that just like everything, all touch points matter at an organization. And probably the one that we heard consistent themes of through talking to ownership groups was just a frustration with the integrity of the data and the cleanliness of the books. And that was always very, very important to us, so that we could make sound business decisions. And yeah, we felt like that was pretty low-hanging fruit to figure out how to build a best-in-class accounting platform. And I think John has absolutely done that and deserves a tremendous amount of credit for that. But with your first hire also comes responsibility. Now, it's not just the four of you. It's other people depending on a paycheck. And I remember for years, I mean, even after hiring John, there were some thin years. I mean, we were begging the
Hey, what time frame sure. was that before or after Georgia? Or
that would have been, we hired John after we acquired the University of Georgia asset. So I think he's been at the company for 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah.
7 years, coming up on 7 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. He's probably put forth 20 years worth of work in 7 years though. So that's probably why I get a little complicated, confused, but,
builds character.
Yeah. Yeah. The responsibility of sort of taking care of people who are working hard for the company and expecting, you know, one very simple thing in return, and that's a paycheck, you know, above sort of all else at that point in time. So, yeah. We were on the phone with the bank begging for an extended credit line so that we could make payroll. I mean, we had some time. We were fully maxing our company's credit cards to make payroll to pay our people. Wow. And that's just the life of an entrepreneur. But again, it was never like, could you say that would be stressful? And a little bit. I mean, it was challenging, but like I said at the beginning, there was never an if. It was always a when. So mm-hmm. we knew if we continued to invest and just stay alive, even if it was on life support, you know, on the gurney getting pushed into the into the ambulance, we were going to stay alive. And if you can fight and scrap long enough to stay alive, you know, good things can happen. So
tell me at what point, so you bring John on, when is it that you start thinking about, what do I want our employees to experience? What, you know, how do I want them to communicate? What do, you know, all those things that drive culture, you know, core values, at what point do you begin writing those out?
Probably 2 years before we even hired John. It was one of the first things that we did as a company. So I think it was in 2000 and probably about 2007. I went to a conference in Las Vegas and I heard Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos.com speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, he's a big culture guy and really preaches his culture. And he made a very profound statement where he said,
he's also the CEO that will actually, don't they actually, when they make an offer, they give you $1,000 to just, basically turn it down. Yeah.
I think it starts at like 100 and he goes up to like, probably even $5,000 if you just take a check right now and walk out.
Yeah.
His philosophy is that it's more expensive to keep people in the organization that are just going to be a flight risk anyway and are there for a paycheck and be toxic to their culture.
Yeah.
I mean, he's gone a little bit extreme in some things. He did this like flat organizational model where there's no hierarchy, no direct reports, just everyone works for themselves on an equal playing field. And I think that actually hurt the company a little bit. And, you know, I like a lot of what he says. That's probably a little too extreme for us. Not that we're not huge on titles, and people always remind me, well, it's of course you don't care about titles. You're the CEO. So titles matter to an extent, but it's more the way that we embrace everyone and the value that they bring. The value creation that somebody can bring and the impact they can bring within an organization is not dependent on the title that follows their name. I think it's a simple way to say it, but Tony in that speech said, you know, there's a misconception in the business world. People say that people are your greatest assets, and people are variable. People come and go. They're unpredictable. They're inconsistent. But the one thing that can be consistent is a culture. So I'll say that culture is your greatest asset. And that really resonated with me early on. And so I got to work shortly thereafter penning our culture and saying, you know, what do we want to be when we grow up? Because a culture will inevitably form.
Right.
If you're intentional about it, it will probably follow more of the way that you want your organization's identity to be reflected. Or if you're not intentional about it, it may not turn out to be the way that you're proud of or reflects what you want your organization to be. So
3 years from the kind of that first meeting, yeah, 2 years before you hire your first employee, I guess you guys are actually still, I guess at that point you guys are still all have full-time jobs and you start putting ink to paper on writing out the culture.
That's, the way I'm describing the timelines you are reflecting accurately as I sort of think back, it might have been a couple of years. It might have been 2009. I was living in San Francisco when we did that, and I don't believe that we had hired John at that time.
Yeah. Still, it's impressive, and my hat's off to you, because most people are not thinking about that before, you know, a lot of times they end up hiring an HR director and then, you know, putting it off to them to do so.
Yeah.
That's,
it's hard to sort of pivot great. And say, well, now that we're here, this is what we want to be like. So, hey, everyone follow suit, and people say, it's not who we are. Like in your dreams, like that's the way you want it to be, but it's not that way. So I really thank Tony, I mean, for instilling that in me. And I'm sure he's left an impact on a lot of people, because he goes around the country talking about and evangelizing the importance of culture. And it's been huge. I mean, it took time to be to really take root in the organization, but it's been genuine. It's something we're very intentional about. We talk about it. We embrace it, and above all else, we live it out, and we expect the leaders to live it out. And when that happens, people, it is intoxicating. People do realize this is important. And if I don't conform and this isn't me and it's forced and it's not genuine, the culture police, you know, who's everyone else that's bought into it, are going to sniff me out real quickly, and I'm not going to have much of a career here at Cardinal Group. So it's become a good tool just in terms of even weeding out some team members that aren't fully embracing it. And it's not for everybody. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not cultish. It's just, it's a foundation of business practices that we expect of our team. And if you read through it, and I always say, like, you don't need to wait for a formal review. You can pull out your culture card and look at the 10 core values. And if in your own honest assessment of yourself, if you can put a check mark next to each one of these core values, I assure you, you're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you're going to be very successful at this company.
So when, you know, you've got your 10 core values on the website, so, you know, our listeners can go there and look at them in their own leisure. But I want to talk about a couple of those. But really quick, as you're sitting down and pinning this out, did you come up with 10 right away? Has that been added over time?
It's always been 10. I mean, there's always these like comical moments in time at each throughout the life of the company. And one of them was one of our initial managers conferences, which now we call our leadership summit. You know, I got really excited about how ideas matter, and everyone has ideas, and how we're willing to reinvent ourselves no matter what it is all the time. And I went as far as saying, you know, even our culture and our core values, if those need to be improved, you know, we'll change those. And just sort of like wrapped up in the moment of, you know, getting fired up about something. And, you know, Alex immediately got up and said, correction. Everything in the company can change. The one thing that will never change is our culture.
Oh, wow.
Core value.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the absolute right thing to say. And so it is the constant. I say it's the foundation that, you know, we stand on. As it doesn't matter what, if you're on the construction team, the investment team, the management team, the marketing agency, development company, whatever future endeavors are. I would say if I went and started a biomedical device company, the first thing I would do was take the Cardinal Group culture and put it into the startup.
Yeah.
Because business agnostic, and it's, you have to have an identity of sort of what's important in an organization. And that's been at the forefront, and it's never changed from day one. And the four principles poured over every word of even the culture explained.
Yeah.
Really, our culture is three things. We have a mission statement, 10 core values, and our culture explained. And the most important is the mission statement, that is believe in doing the right thing, which then infers our core value number one, which is do the right thing all the time.
Yeah, so that's kind of a perfect perfect intersection into what I want to talk about next. Yeah, you've got 10 core values, but that number one, you know, certainly seems to be the North Star for everyone. It's been repeated to me from people that I've spoke with in the field. It's been, you know, certainly with you and Alex, you know, it's been a topic of discussion, which is do the right thing all the time. You know, wanted to ask you, you know, give me an example or two of how you've seen that play out, something that sticks in your mind that you'll never forget, you know, from that kind of being the core number one North Star. And, you know, as you guys have grown, something that's happened where somebody, you know, remembered that core value and landed on the right side of a decision.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably at this point thousands of stories behind right. each of the values where team members have embraced it. And it's been a small whisper in their ear of, you know, this is who we are. Remember who you are and who you're representing, all your fellow teammates and this company, which is founded on this culture and these core values. So obviously do the right thing all the time is a reflection of the mission statement. Like I shared, believe in doing the right thing. And I would say that's sort of at the core, the people that we want to have in this organization are people who take that to heart in a big way. You know, they are men and women of character that want to do the right thing in a world that sadly at this point is pretty void of that moral and ethical compass, that North Star,
yeah.
You know, just as us as humans. You know, the temptations of greed in business, and it never ceases to amaze me the longer I've been in business and interacted with more people, how people act completely self-interested. Whether that be a former employee, and we say employee for former team members. When you're on the team, you're a team member. When you're off the team, you were an employee.
Right.
But, you know, just some of those types of personnel challenges we've had with, you know, frivolous employment claims and partners who feel that, you know, they have leverage on a situation and act upon it. And it just sort of leaves a bad taste in our mouth. And I think that what we have preached is over the period of time, people will gravitate towards people who take a long-term perspective, that truly believe in doing the right thing. And it's an easy way to stand out in this world we live in at this point, because so few people are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that it can be an attraction. A lot of people say, man, I had a good experience at Cardinal Group, whether it's a team member who was a part of the team, whether it was a client, whether it was a vendor. And it's not to say that we roll over and we just sort of, you know, take it because we should and we're scared of confrontation. I mean, we are a team filled with type A go-getters that are not going to back down from a good argument. And we're going to fight for our position and our point. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't check the box that it feels right, or we know that it's the right, not the right thing to do, we're very intentional about the long-term game and doing business the right way. And people oftentimes ask me, and I think ask my business partners as well, you know, what do you want in your career? What are your personal goals in business? And I think it's pretty easy for me. Is I want the legacy, the business legacy for my children to be able to say, you know, hey, maybe my dad wasn't the most successful guy in the world or whatever it is. And maybe we are, who knows? But if they can say, but every single person I talked to that knew my dad in business said that he did it the right way.
Yeah.
That would be an accomplishment in the legacy from a business perspective that, you know, I want to leave behind, because I had that in my dad.
Yeah.
Everyone that I met with in his business career said, I've never met a more ethical, upright, you know, you should be so proud of your dad, the way he conducted himself in all business settings. And, you know, that's what I want. And to me, that's what do the right thing all the time is, that reminder of what I want the legacy to be. And you asked about a story. I mean, I can give one early on that was a resident, one of our communities in Georgia, really focused on Georgia. We're neglecting the other 29 states that we're operational in. But in Georgia, it was early on because it was impactful that a resident claimed that, you know, we had not attached the HVAC unit to his unit correctly, and that someone was able to sneak into his unit when he wasn't there and take his laptop. And we reviewed the lease and wanted to uphold the terms of the lease. And there was a lot of gray area and we were pretty uncertain. He got very active on social media and on the review sites and was very, very negative. And we just kind of made the decision and had done enough investigation to where there was probably some culpability for the team. And we said, you know what, let's do the right thing here. So actually one of the principals flew to Georgia, met with the resident one-on-one, and then took him to Best Buy and bought him a new laptop to replace his, and, you know, wished him the best of luck, and that we were apologetic, but we had to, you know, follow the law of the lease to avoid fair housing and all that sort of stuff that goes along with that. But we felt that there was some culpability and we wanted to honor his request. And he completely changed his tune and became one of our largest advocates for mm-hmm. the community. He re-signed. He got 10 of his friends to sign. I think he lived there for 3 more years.
Yeah.
And it was a simple gesture that, you know, had some gray area around it. It might not have felt like, you know, we were completely in the wrong, but we just sort of dug back into the culture bank and said, let's do the right thing here. And it really paid dividends. And I think those early on, those stories start to prove out the culture early on and give it the impact that you hope that it has, and contextualizes everything you intended it to be and the return on effort that a culture can be. So
yeah.
We have a random act of kindness line item in most of our operating budgets that allow the community manager at their discretion to take care of the residents. And that can look many different ways, but examples are, you know, infinite on the way that our team has been able to take care of their resident base through that line item, which is a complete acknowledgement of do the right thing all the time as to why we have that in the budget.
Yeah. So Dale, speaking of the core values, number 8 was the other one that I wanted to spend just a quick second on. Number 8 is do more with less. I think any entrepreneur understands exactly what that means. But I wanted to ask you, why was it important that you make that a core value?
Yeah, because of our beginnings and being an entrepreneurial organization, it's really the only way to survive is to accomplish more with fewer people and fewer resources. And I think that extends into even where we are now when resources aren't quite as scarce, we still want to do more with less. We don't want to have a bunch of excess or fat on the bone. We want to have just the right number of boat seats with the right people driving forward. And it's just an expectation of accomplishing more with less. And I think as I distill that down even deeper, I think it's a character makeup as well, to where you have categorically two very general buckets of people. You have a victor's bucket and you have a victim's bucket. And I think that victors are people that do more with less, that they see rewards and opportunities, and they're going to have to kick down some doors, and they're not going to be handed everything, but they're going to accomplish their dreams and goals and aspirations no matter who's in the way. And that's someone, a victor, that does more with less.
Yeah.
Where a victim, on the contrary side of that, is someone that sees, you know, roadblocks and consequences and every excuse in the book as to why other people or other circumstances didn't allow them to reach what was rightfully theirs to take. And we want this company to be filled with a bunch of people that have a victor's mentality, that do more with less. And we're never going to be the company that has the most resources or the best everything. You know, we can certainly aspire to do that, but, you know, it's sort of the mentality that, well, once I have more money, I'll be happier. Then they have more money, but they need a little more money. And I think you could equate the same thing to business, that, oh, once we have this tool or we have this person or we have this type of resource at our disposal, then we'll be successful. And if you wait to get there, you never get there. So you just have to accomplish what you can in the moment with the resources that are available to you, which honestly at this company are always going to be fewer than our competitors. And yeah. That's a comfortable spot to be, quite honestly, for
yeah.
us.
Yeah. So, Dale, as Cardinal continues to grow, and I know that's, you know, you guys are steaming along and have got a lot of progression going into 2018, and a lot of exciting things are going to be happening. With that, it's going to, you know, there's going to be more people. Had a great conversation with Shannon and Christina about, you know, that recruitment process and finding the right people that fit into that culture. But, you know, the more people you add, that's always going to be something that is going to become harder and harder to manage, and really have your, you know, the pulse on. So as Cardinal continues to grow, what are you doing to make sure that this culture that you've set out, that you guys have, you know, wrote down in your core values and your mission statement, what are you doing to preserve that as the company continues to flourish?
Well, one of the greatest privileges we have in business is to lead people. We have a saying here that leaders are made, they're not born.
Yeah.
And I think we've been working hard to develop the next generation of leaders at the company. And that's not because we're in a succession planning mode when we're sitting in our mid to late 30s at this point. We've got a lot of runway in front of us, but you hit the nail on the head. The organization is going to continue to grow. Our reach is going to be wider. There's going to be less connectivity with the principal leadership of the organization. It's just a fact of the size that we're growing to and will continue to grow to. And so it's important to us as the leadership to develop that next generation of leaders that can be the mouthpieces, that are living and breathing the culture and are evangelizing the culture and then pushing that down through the organization and inspiring and influencing people like we've had the ability to do for so many years, that now this is no longer a company that is going to be its success in the ability for its culture to survive is no longer the responsibility and right. hinges on four principles. It now hinges on the hundreds of people that have poured themselves into this company and made the culture what it is today. And it's their responsibility now to make sure that the heartbeat or the drumbeat, which is the culture, is loud and resonating as the organization grows. So it's an us thing at this point. It's not an executive thing. So, and I think we have so many capable and wonderful leaders that have developed their leadership skills over the years. That has been one of the greatest rewards of this company, has been to see people who started early in their career with the right character but a limited skill set, and how they have flourished and just expanded their universe and their skill set to become effective leaders and contributors at this company. It has been so awesome to see on so many different levels. But to answer your question, yeah, it's we put it in place, we set it in motion. And it's going to take a lot to derail that. And if we felt that it was going in a different direction, we would get very intentional with getting it back on course. But there's little things that we do, such as the onboarding call every Tuesday that I'm on with every single team member, welcoming them to Cardinal Group. And I spend about 30 minutes with them, and I spend 29 of those minutes talking about our culture and how it can't just be words on a website.
You said that's every Tuesday?
Every Tuesday. We do all of our onboarding on Tuesdays.
Very cool.
And the company is nice enough to invite me in for 30 minutes, 10:45, every Tuesday to have that conversation with our team.
And that's everybody from a part-time student worker up to someone at the corporate office, I assume.
Every single new hire in the organization regardless of company, tenure, experience, anything. And I want to be personally accessible to the team. I mean, I invite them to pick up the phone and call me, to send me an email, you know, send me a message on Dashboard, which is another culture tool that we have, if they have questions or they have feedback. You know, nobody's bigger than the organization. And if people are willing to pick up the phone and call you because they feel so passionately about something, you'd be remiss not to hear that feedback, because it could change the trajectory in which your organization is headed. So it's a real honor and a privilege, honestly, to welcome the team. It's one of my favorite things I get to do every week. I do feel like I sound like a bit of a broken record, but there's still a lot of smiles, even with those that hear the talk every week. But those are kind of the things that we do. I mentioned Dashboard, which is like an online intranet, like a Facebook for our company, that we developed specifically with our culture in mind, to where we are celebrating team member accomplishments, whether they be big milestone accomplishments, or if they're just small things, which we call high fives. You know, thanks for grabbing me lunch when I was stuck in that meeting. You're awesome. And then we tie it to a core value, and which core value their action represented. And then we track all that data and let people know sort of where there might be a cultural blind spot. Or
oh, cool. So it's not even just a feed. It's actually, you guys are tracking that data and relaying it back to the core values. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't able to find an off-the-shelf solution, because our culture is very unique, that it had to reflect the culture. And the adoption on it's been great. So we share pictures, we share ideas, you know, who's got a good marketing idea. I have writer's block, or here's a cool experience that we have with a resident today, or here's feedback, or celebrating successes. And you know, we give it the thumbs up. People have suggested the thumbs down button, but we haven't agreed to that yet.
Well, Dale, I think you've given us a lot for our audience to really think about. I appreciate the time that you've given us, especially coming up here on the holiday and taking this time out right before to do this. This has been great. And look forward to many other discussions. Any parting thoughts for our audience members?
I just think that it's of just incredible importance to find something that you're really passionate about. And I know we've probably heard that from grandma and grandpa, but I've been very blessed finding something that I'm incredibly passionate about. And not every day is a great day. You know, in Cardinal Group's world, and there's a lot of BS we have to deal with and things that you don't want to do. But I think we're in a really unique industry that has a lot of runway in front of it and has infinite room for improvement. And I think that the industry is starting to gain the attention that it deserves from the workforce as a place where you can really build a career and feel connected to something that's really important. I mean, what's more important than somebody's home?
Exactly.
If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, shelter is right near the top. It's definitely a top three. And we have the ability to impact the lives of people that's their home. It's one of their main needs. And I think there's just a better way to do it. And that's what excites me about Cardinal Group, is challenging the status quo of the way the industry's done it for so long, and finding ways to provide a better work environment, being led by culture, and providing a better living experience for the residents that we're so lucky to serve, you know, on a daily basis. So I'm just really pumped for the industry at large. I'm excited about where Cardinal Group's going, and I think we should all feel like our work and our efforts are incredibly important to the impact it has in the world. And so let's not forget that in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dale, it has been a pleasure, and I feel like there's 100 other subjects that we could talk on. If you don't mind, I think I may bring you onto the podcast sometime in the future to talk talk more about not just culture, but some of the more tactical things as well. I think what you guys are doing at Cardinal is great, and certainly moving things into a as you said, a new direction and raising the bar, not only for what the meeting customers' expectations, but also providing a work environment, as you said, that everybody can really be proud of, that they are there and able to take something away from it. So I appreciate it, and I'm sure we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was I feel very humbled to even think that somebody like yourself who's doing podcasts would even want to speak with myself and learn about Cardinal Group. But, that's flattering and much appreciated. And I'll one-up you. If you want to talk tactical details, we'll bring Alex O'Brien, our chief operating officer, and my business partner on, who's a hell of a lot smarter than I am. He always reminds me that I'm the face and he's the brains, and he's 100% correct.
Well, great. Well, I will certainly lean on you guys to help out with that in the future, and I appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Wes. You too.
Well, I think that finally wraps it up with my interview with Cardinal. So
it only took like 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, it's a good mini series to listen to. So
absolutely.
Well, with that being said, I think we've hit on all the takeaways during the intro. So not going to go through that again. But just to remind everybody of a couple of things. One, tomorrow, December 1st, if you're probably listening to this on December 1st, and if you're listening to it after December 1st, I hate it for you, but NAA is having their annual campus housing or student housing conference that they've rebranded Campus Connects, and it is the early bird deadline for registration ends on December 1st. So if you want to take advantage of having those cheaper registration rates, make sure you do that before, I guess, midnight. Their website's not completely clear. It just says December 1st. So so make sure you get registered for that. And
when is that conference?
It is, I think, February 13th and 14th.
Mm. So, you said it's in Orlando?
In Orlando, home of Mickey. So, I can't remember the resort that it's at, but it's got a lot of golf, so that should be fun. Yeah, so, and second thing to make sure that you remember, this episode is sponsored by Conservis, the student housing utility expert. So go check them out at conservis.com. Guys, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. And I've got a really, this is going to be one of those episodes that's just talk about tactical, and also something that's coming out that I hate to use the word revolutionary, because, it's on like an iPhone or something like that. But it's a service that's coming out that when I listened to, kind of the pitch, I was like, how in the heck has this not been invented yet? And anyway, so make sure that you take a listen to that. I'm not gonna spoil anything, but it's gonna be a great podcast. So
exciting,
especially for everybody on the operations side that has to deal with a lot of stuff. If you just want a headache taken off of you, this is one that you want to listen to. So. All right, great. I appreciate it. Take care, Greta, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.